Come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back, ladies and germs, to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. Every Saturday, it happens right here on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, or wherever podcasts are found. I'm your host, Colin. I'm surrounded by the internet radio superstars.
This is Brent.
Travis.
Sean.
And tonight we watched Reanimator.
What?
From the year 1985. Directed by Stuart Gordon. It's 1985. A great banner year in the history of horror films. Am I right? Am I right? Well, you had the three significant zombie movies. George Romero did the sequel to Dawn. He did Day of the Dead. You had Return of the Living Dead and Reanimator. He also had Fright Night, 1985, and Life Force.
Life Force.
I would take that off the list.
So the 30th,
that's a movie that came out.
30th anniversary. All of those. So Reanimator. It's a movie that's based on the writings of H.P. Lovecraft. And I've always wanted to do like an H.P. Lovecraft movie on this podcast. I'm like, what are we going to do? And so for a while there, I was thinking about Dagon.
Oh, no.
Which is another Stuart Gordon movie. But it's like, it's The Shadow Out of Innsmouth, which I think is like my favorite H.P. Lovecraft story.
It's like a very bad version of Shadow over Innsmouth.
Yeah.
It's all Stuart Gordoned up. It's all Brian Yuznud.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing. It's like some of that, it's like, you know, with Lovecraft stuff, I want to see like one done like in period, you know, like 1920s or, you know, because he was writing in, I want to say the 20s to the 30s was when he was writing all this fiction. And I think the guy like died penniless, but now he's like thought of as, you know, next to Edgar Allan Poe, maybe I'm assuming like number two, right? As in fantastic.
When it comes to concept. He's still known as a pretty, bad writer. Like, not a lot of people think H.P. Lovecraft is a great writer. His concepts are
right,
what
concepts and his themes are what people seem to gravitate towards, but
just because that
writing
is
not so good?
No, the writing is not so... He, like, really... I mean, he just repeats himself a lot. His, like, I don't know. His writing's a little...
Well, what struck me about him was, like, when I read, like, Stephen King. And Stephen King at one point wrote a nonfiction book. It was called Dance Macabre. And it was like, you know, here's how horror fiction works. He like did a chapter or something on H.P. Lovecraft. It was like, holy cow, like you really think that this guy is the shit. Because I guess when he was growing up, he read all these pulp magazines that were all H.P. Lovecraft. And then when you read H.P. Lovecraft, you're like, holy shit, like Stephen King like borrows, there's a certain, it's like a tempo or something to his shocks and his scare moments and, you know, the, you know, in italics, like, and the, you know, door was still closed behind him, you know, whatever that Stephen King would, you know, use in his early writing. So I was like, man, it's like you can trace the pedigree of King back to Lovecraft. But I think, I mean, there's like, you know, for early authors of like a fantastic fiction, especially, you know, I mean, I guess if you're looking at like specifically American, you know, you got Washington Irving. You know, I don't know where Shirley Jackson comes along.
Well, but I would think it's
one novel.
The idea that Lovecraft introduced space, you know, almost sci-fi aspects to horror. Like, you know, we were just coming to the science age or whatever, and he introduced the idea of, well, didn't introduce the idea, but, you know, the whole world in sync or out of sync with ours, like a different vibrational dimension or whatever the hell that these things coexist with us in. And I mean, nowadays, those theories are being taken very seriously today, which is kind of funny that, like, holy fuck, these fucking fiction writers back in the 20s had the concepts of things existing on different vibrational levels, and nowadays it's like, holy shit.
Well, he had, a cosmological view, I think, that was, like, it was... See, I don't want to say it was like without religion or without God, because he like invented his own. Well, they weren't even gods. His creatures are just like these older than time things that created our known universe. And, you know, and so I guess they were gods to the people on Earth. But he made a universe where man was dwarfed and felt it was insignificant. Like, you know, the lives of people, and that's where his cosmic horror, I think, comes in. It's just like, my life means nothing, and you know, compared to this thing that's been going on forever. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty epic.
And there's been so many few, like, good adaptations of Lovecraft fiction.
You know, I mean, bet this isn't even a good adaptation. I know. They take the ideas of H.P. Lovecraft and they kind of like, ooh, we made a movie.
Yeah.
I want to say the one thing that's probably a good adaptation is when the character Dean Cain is like reading the journal of Wes. And
that's
just
probably
says,
right from the book.
I performed it on gerbils, hamster. Yeah, that's like right out of the book. Yeah. That's about it.
So what is this based off of?
It's like a short story. Specific? Well, Lovecraft never wrote novels. He wrote short stories primarily for
Weird Tales.
Like Pulp Fiction magazines and short novellas, like At the Mountains of Madness would be like a novella. I think Shadow out of Innsmouth is
even
a novella.
Even Mountains of Madness is what, only like 60 pages? Yeah, I mean, that's like the longest he did.
Yeah.
And that was still in magazine form, I want to say. It wasn't like.
Seems like you wrote a lot. I saw you had the complete works of H.P. Lovecraft sitting out upstairs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, but I haven't gotten to Herbert West Reanimator yet. That's the name of the story, and I think it was serialized originally, published in like Weird Tales or whatever, a 6-part series. I want to say maybe I read it when I was, you know, a lot younger, but I just don't remember. I don't remember it being anything like this movie, if that is the case. You know, that's all.
Well,
I think
that
the movie
story didn't have Jeffrey Combs in it.
That's very true. What. Yeah. 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 That guy's like, I mean, because I had never heard of him prior to this movie. And then, like, seeing him in this, I mean, he's got such a distinct, like, performance. You know, like, his mannerisms and all that are just, like, they're spot on, this too. Is, I mean, like, just weird. You know, because it's a mad science. It's like a Frankenstein story.
Exactly. This
is
how I would assume Frankenstein should act, right? This is the moment of the... It's alive, it's alive, but he's on that all the time. Like, he's at that stage every minute, like, always looking for something to fucking reanimate. And
yeah, he's unfazed, like, as, you know, people are dying around him. It's
he's past that point. He already got to the point where it's alive. He's way past that.
I don't know if
point.
He is unfazed. Like, I mean, maybe we'll talk a little bit once we get into, like, what the story's about and shit. But I don't know. I don't think he is unfazed. He's just been dealing with it by himself. That's why he wants... Dan Cain, like, you have to fucking help me. You have to be there with me. And, I mean, so what? Our main character is Dan Cain, right?
Yes.
Who's a medical student. He's like the famous Miskatonic Medical Institution in Arkham, Massachusetts.
Yeah. Yeah. I never picture it looking like that. It's modern style building.
I want
that big gothic, you know, kind of thing. But
it's always 2 p.m. at Miskatonic in Salem, Massachusetts.
Yeah. Well, it's Dan Cain's played by Bruce Abbott, who went on to be in Bride of Reanimator and Beyond Reanimator. I don't know.
I think just Bride.
He's like the poor man's Bruce Campbell. I mean, physically, I guess. He's like, sure. Yeah, he kind of has a Bruce Campbell look to him, but you know, without the pratfalls and all that.
Acting. Like, the guy can't act, right? Not the greatest. He has his issues.
I thought he was okay. I like
he's the only one, because this is actually, coming into this, I thought this was going to be a cheaper movie than what I saw, really. This is a well-made movie, actually.
It's cheap.
I'm sure
it's
cheap,
like,
but they hide it well.
Yeah, they do.
But it looks good.
And it's a first time, I mean, like, Gordon had never directed anything before, so it's a first time feature from a director who... He was a Chicago-based theater director. He had some theater called the Organic Theater that I think like William H. Macy and like Chaz Palminteri or, you know, one of those guys like came out of. And I know he was doing like David Mamet play, like him and Mamet, you know, knew each other and would, you know, he'd do some of David Mamet plays and stuff like that. But I mean, so he's a theater director, and like I think you can see that in the movie, which. You know, he's always got all of his action and his staging all seems to take place like in front of the camera. Like he's either got like a guy in the foreground talking to a group of people. Like all of his action seems to happen in the frame. He never really has to turn the camera. Like everything's happening in front of you like you would in theater, I guess.
Well, sure, you can't afford like, you know, that's what I'm thinking. This whole film is like, oh, we got this much film. Let's just put that camera down and you guys run through the scene. Because, I mean, this movie goes, like, in and out of, like, theater lighting, right? I mean, there's some lighting that's just like, okay, they turn the light on in the hallway. That's right.
Especially when you get into, like, the actual morgue. Like, you can see that as a stage set. Mm-hmm. Especially with the lighting. Well, like you were yeah. About. That,
well, they get like camera angles from, like,
right.
Way lighting
from
actually way gets dramatic, looks, yeah. Right?
You right know. Up in where a lighting grid would be and everything. And you can, it just feels like, you know, there's the three walls and everything's cut off and there's an audience right there. And the lighting, you know, the same.
That. In the basement. Cool. I'm not sure that there actually is a fourth wall to the
no.
basement.
No, because they never shoot from
they
that side.
They never show you the door. It's right. always like just coming right. down the stairs or like, you know, oh, I'm going to ram into the door. Oh, I'm falling down
no,
the
they
stairs.
Do, they do chase the cat. Like, and they hit
well,
all
that could
four
be,
walls.
That looked
that.
Like that was a three wall, wasn't it?
Really?
It
I don't
like,
know. They yeah. they pretty much run all over that place.
Yeah,
the back wall was. With the stairs and then the other wall. And I don't think they ever look.
You're sure, because there's like the fridge on one open. Side, the there's the lockers on the other side.
Yeah, but do you ever see what's
there's
and the stairs are on stairs the, on one the side. Middle wall. What's on the wall behind the
well? But
table?
They well, but they show that though. I'm pretty sure they do. Like the stairs and the other wall. I'm pretty sure they show. I bet they do.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, I like how this movie sets you up automatically with the character of Dan Cain being, like, upset at, that he can't resuscitate this woman, right? He's mm-hmm. at this medical school or whatever the fuck. And, like, I mean, right there you give an excuse, like, why would anybody go down this road with Herbert West, right? Well, I mean, in the first scene they show you why this guy would do it. It's because he's obsessed with, like, fuck, you know, like, we gotta like somehow beat this natural. There's gotta be something more we can do.
It's interesting, right? Because he's got, I guess, as we come into the movie, he's dealing with the. It's the spark of the idea that inspired Frankenstein, right? That, you know, it's like death. We have to beat death. Death should never happen to anybody again.
Well, it looks like it upsets him, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
He's
yeah, yeah.
Physically, like no, like he can't stand like someone dying on him or yeah. whatever, you know. So. Yeah, either, I mean, they don't tell you anything, but.
And then he meets Herbert West, who comes in from Sweden, where he studied with Dr. Hans Gruber.
Indeed. Hans Gruber.
Hans Gruber from Hans Die Hard.
Gruber. I read about three
with
Time
and studied
magazine.
On, apparently.
Yeah. 3 years before Die Hard.
Give him life.
So, you know, Herbert comes into the medical, the school. And he immediately, I think, gets into an antagonistic relationship with this Dr. Hill, who Herbert accuses of plagiarizing like a bunch of Dr. Gruber's material.
Right, specifically the theory that the brain lives 6 to 12 minutes after everything else shuts down.
Yeah. But there was also the location of the will or the
right.
soul.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
The
will and the brain.
Play
yes.
later.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. So I guess he's proved right by the end of the movie, right? He did find the.
He did find it, yes. He did indeed with his laser drill.
Yeah. And at the same time, Dan Cain is carrying on a relationship with the dean's daughter, which is the beautiful Barbara Crampton. First time I ever saw her in a movie. And she's got to be one of the best, like, good sports actresses. Of all time.
Gotta be.
For the amount of exposure that she goes through
yeah,
here. I was
so
just in weird
exposure yeah. and just general molester.
yeah.
By yeah. What is supposed to be just a head.
Yeah.
And so random hands.
That's a visual pun then, right? That she got a little head.
I like how creepy how creepy Dr. Hill is towards her, like, in front of her own fucking father, the dean, right? He's
right.
just like, to my... You know, esteemed partners, beautiful, but may she... It's just like, Jesus
oh, yeah.
fucking Christ, dude.
He's probably talking, he's like, I only got one gear, and I'm going to stick with it through this entire movie, or any movie I'm in. Because that seems to be his M.O. as far as he's just
he's
like...
He's got like a half smile.
Creepy.
Because what else? He was in The Giver.
He was in,
yes,
Giver.
He was in Giver.
He was also... Wasn't he... He wasn't in The Beyond, was he?
Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm like, I can't, aside from the Guyver, I think that's the only thing I ever saw. His name's David Gale, the actor.
Yeah, I'd have to, I think he's brilliant. Like, one day I have to go through his, as long as it's a, I mean, horror movie, he's great. He's a great villain.
I can't imagine doing anything else.
And I want to say
maybe
that his wife was surprised, I think, but when she first saw the film, and I think she divorced him.
Oh.
Because there's a story on the commentary where, like, the cast and crew or whatever got together to have the screening, and I think she slapped his face during that scene. And, you know, yeah, I think they got divorced after that.
Really?
Yeah. The scene in question is, if you've seen this movie, the one that you're never going to forget. I think they even reference it in the movie American Beauty. That's like, this movie comes up as a subject. And it's like, is that the movie where the girl gets head from the head or whatever the hell? And yeah, there's at some point, you know, well, I suppose we got to wait to get there. Because at some point you've got Herbert West having a perfectly good head on his shoulders and another one in the on a pan in his debt or on his desk. Yes. What is it? What's the
that's like the
line?
Slogan from the poster.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just like there's a series of unfortunate events that just kind of truck toward a nightmare scenario at the end of this movie. So,
like, right. I guess I understand that they're trying to, I don't know, reanimate or bring back to life these people. But is that the ultimate goal? Like throughout the film, it's just he just wants to keep bringing people back to life. He's just trying to perfect.
I think he's his. Ultimate goal is perfection, I think. He wants to prove that he can do it.
And he's fresher and fresher.
He does.
I mean, he just can't. He knows that the consciousness and the soul should be there, but he feels, I mean, since his anybody that gets the reagent put into him basically becomes violent.
Yes.
Or fucking their eyes blow out of their, you know, heads right. or right. whatever the fuck, you know.
He's messing up the dosage yeah. or whatever he thinks, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, the dosage versus the freshness right. in a weird yeah, way. So he's that, constantly just...
He hasn't figured out that yeah. math yet. I think he wants to prove that he can do it so that he can get...
Like, I mean,
so that they'll let him work on it so more.
He yeah. kind of does. I mean, he does it. He just can't get that.
Sure.
He can't get the cognitive responses.
Right.
Like, he can't get the...
Also, the circumstances never are in his favor when he does seem to do this, as the morgue scene where they bring back the freshest dead body they've had thus far. And, like you said, it's just a series of unfortunate events after that, because then yeah. Halsey comes in and...
Yeah, gets killed.
Gets smushed.
Well, because there's like so many times in this movie where you're like, this is the end of the fucking movie. Like, these guys are going to get caught. And they're just like, oh,
how do you
fuck no, they just like killed that guy and brought him back to life. Jesus.
Yeah. You know? That's the upside for a movie when you have a reagent, I guess. Like, right. no character is like ever actually dead.
Yeah.
But I think, like, it's, I think, you know, he's reanimating cats at the beginning of the movie, you know, but he wants to get like, some kind of evidence that, you know, you can do this with a human and actually have like some kind of conscious response. Right. Yes. So I think the only one that they're actually experimenting on is that first one after they've been kicked out of medical school.
Mm. Yeah.
Which that seemed to happen like really abruptly.
Really?
Kane
quick.
Goes to the dean and's like, Herbert West has brought a cat back to life. And the next moment,
right.
the dean is screaming at him and basically like, your loan's been rescinded.
Well,
because
his daughter
out.
Walked in on the reanimating of the cat, so I'm sure she's like, Daddy! Well, he's it, like, what have you done with my
But did
daughter?
It sound like he just found that out in the telling? Because he's
yes.
like, and Meg walked, what were you doing with my daughter?
Right.
Like,
no, he really so. Overreacts to something like such yeah. as this, and it's just...
Well, and, but he was worried about the medical equipment from the college, too.
I just don't think he wants to do it to marry his daughter.
Yeah, well.
I think that's pure.
No, he doesn't want to
fine
with
it
earlier.
With her. Like, well, maybe
yeah.
the
fact
because
he's like a Puritan
the night
dude.
And the
but
daughter
he knew they were going together.
And...
What do you think they were doing?
I mean, well, but on. He's Puritan.
Well, he seemed like, I mean, if she was his, or these are fiancés? Yeah?
No.
I mean, like, there
well,
was a
yeah.
Well, she says, if you get your fucking doctorate, I'll marry you. It's like, thanks, lady.
So then he introduced her to Herbert as his fiancé.
Yes. But as the only, I think it's just between them. It doesn't seem that the yeah. father knows.
Right.
That sure. they knows they're going together, but that's about it.
That's about say. As far as it goes.
It just, it did seem still. Like, oh shit, you know what? I know, now that I'm thinking, I'm like sitting there going, like, it feels like a very abrupt, you know, like from, hey, I'm cool with you, you know, you're an okay guy, you're dating my daughter, to like, what? This is madness. You've gone crazy. You've lost your mind
though
because you're telling me that you saw something come back to life. You're crazy. You're out of my school. And I think there was a subplot that was deleted from the movie. You might know about this, Travis, that in the original cut of the movie, and there are deleted scenes to back this up, Dr. Hill was also a hypnotist.
Is that why later on in the movie he stares down West and West is like,
yeah,
oh.
yeah.
Because
yeah.
that kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, it does. He does it to Meg in front of the two-way mirror.
Okay.
Like, I want you to think of me as a right. friend or whatever. That's during one of the hypnosis scenes. They just cut the beginning off of it. Okay. He hypnotizes West when he's going to take his stuff. Right. And then he's able to hypnotize all of the dead guys at the end.
Because, mind control is his big thing.
Yeah. So I think there's a scene missing. We got to go check this out. But I think there's a scene missing where he plants at the dinner scene, plants the idea that Dan Cain is, you know, bad like, for
do
his,
you think that's, I mean, because he says it in yeah, this version, yeah. in the normal version, he says, do you think that's wise? You know, you could tell that the, yeah. the doctor has, well, but in this version, you just think it's because of the new laser,
it's like a laser drill.
Laser drill.
Yeah, the laser drill that Miss Katonic just got like a huge grant.
Which you could
so
just call a laser.
This dude will just do whatever because Dr. Hill's responsible for the money, basically.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I always took the
was
dean
whispering in his ear.
Was also just like, with that Dan boy. I mean, he just seemed like, you know, he just didn't like it, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, he seemed maybe jealous.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. Hill's definitely jealous.
Hill's though.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I'm like, why did the dean, like, explode at Dan yeah. Cain? Right. I mean, just overreact.
Right. Well, he does bring up the, if any hospital equipment was used in this.
Yeah, but that's
he doesn't want to lose his grant.
I'm still, he doesn't want Dan to be with his dog.
Right, and maybe Hill's whispering in his ear a little bit. I mean, aside from being a mystic, apparently.
Yeah.
He's whispering in his ear, like, this would not be a good idea. Or, you know, he could even be threatening him at that point. This is all behind the scenes shit that we're
Stuart Gordon said that it was Charles Band. He wasn't even the producer, a financier at this point, the guy who currently runs Full Moon Pictures, but he put up some money to help the movie get completed. And I guess his dad said to Stuart Gordon, it's like, you got to take that out. You got two crazy things. You know, a movie can only have one crazy thing that you have to explain. They got a reagent. You can't have mysticism as
this
well.
This is two different... I mean, this is two movies joined into one. You get the reanimator at the beginning, but then as soon as Dr. Hill gets his head cut off, that's when you get the zombie master who is lobotomizing...
Yeah.
He just knows... Because he knows that the... Whatever, the point of will in the brain... But it just doesn't work on normal people. But if you're a zombie, then you're just that. It's almost kind of like, in a weird way, it's almost like the original Haitian zombie, right? The idea that the person is just a very... Right.
Just
mind
control.
Yeah.
But not necessarily dead, but they are under your control.
Yeah, very suggestible.
So the
suggestivity works better on a zombie mind, somebody that was brought back.
Mm. But why was Hill, once his head was cut off, why was he able to... be so cognitive to control these other...
Rather than everybody else who kind of went mad?
Because he gives them the lobotomy, then he's just making the suggestions.
But still, like, prior to that, didn't we see, like, anybody that would be reanimated was, like, fucking nuts?
Yeah.
But when he does it to Hill...
He does bring Hill, the reanimated head, back, I think, the quickest. West brings Hill's head back the quickest after he cuts it off.
He seems to, like, when he, like, sucks in the blood, like... through it, or you know, he soaks up the blood neck. Through it,
yeah,
through the neck. Yeah. Like, then he starts to like have ideas and you know, a plot and a plan. And he's like,
well, there's also the fact that he can control his dismembered corpse or you know, his headless body,
yeah, that he has to talk to for some reason.
Let's get the door.
Somehow he like has psychic control over it. See, again, I think like if the
it's a slower version of like comedy bits from back in the day. The guy's got his head's like, no, the other way, you idiot.
And yeah. He's got the eye rolling moment with the oh my God, what's my body off?
Stupid
here
body.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm controlling it.
Yeah. So he's the smartest of the reanimated.
Apparently.
The subject.
I wasn't sure. Like maybe I missed a point where like the serum was getting better, you know, or more. You know, but it wasn't, right? I mean, it was always the same juice that they were using.
Yeah, but he could have been administering, because he had, you know, like, what is that? He was on his fourth human subject, I think, at that point. Third? Fourth? Third?
Something like that.
At least third. Fourth in the movie. For some reason, I don't, even though they say he came from Switzerland, it's like, I always feel like the beginning of the movie is something that happens after.
Uh-huh.
Just because it's like, why
German
the fuck?
Nazi experimentation?
If you're that far ahead, you're in, you know, Switzerland learning from fucking people. Right. Why would you have to go to Massachusetts to go to a normal college that you're right. just for the bodies, probably, the place for the morgue.
Yeah. I mean, maybe could something, be. The That's guy, Hill, who was ripping off Gruber has something to do with it. As to why he came there specifically.
He doesn't, but maybe he's
ripping him off, but maybe he is, like, after Gruber, the second most in this field of this study. Like, that's where he has to go.
The most learned.
To keep going.
Doctor. Yeah.
I mean, there's that scene where, you know, it's an amusing scene with a pencil. Where right. West it just breaks the pencil whenever
6 to 12 minutes.
Yeah, because I'm like, is he just cracking that whenever the guy is saying something that's been plagiarized? I think he's saying it whenever it's something he disagrees with. Like,
yeah,
you know, you're saying this, breaking the pencil, your concentration.
Because then he starts talking about where the will's located, and that's when he breaks the other one. Yeah. Because yeah, he just doesn't like whatever the fuck he feels like ripped
you're
off.
You're teaching
of
these
people
drivel.
Well, that's what, like, you're stopping their minds before they can even... I mean, that's the thing I love about this fucking movie. Just the idea that, science will think, I mean, shit, back in the Victorian age, people thought we knew all we're ever going to know. I mean, science always thinks we know everything and we know all we're ever going to know, and they shut down all other possibilities of thinking, where... That's why I like that this movie just kind of... talks about that a little bit.
Well, it always seems to come from, like, well, I was just sidebar, but I saw this week, like, some kid figured out, like, some test, a saliva test or something for Alzheimer's. He's in, like, grammar school. So it's like there's always these new ideas coming, you know. So I guess that's West's point of view is, like, you know, he's coming in with, like, you know, I've seen... You know, through my reagent being able to like bring these things back to life, it's like I know that death isn't the end and there's more to be learned here than you're just kind of saying, like, you know, everybody just is like, death is the end. That's it. It's over.
Says the human body is just a chemical compound. Mm-hmm. And if you can reset it, then why not be able to? If you break it down into molecules or atoms, then maybe there's a way to.
And I love the fact that the reagent.
Oh god,
that's great.
Yeah,
that's so great.
How do
you think they just broke like 50 million glow sticks? Yeah. It's gotta be glow sticks.
Yeah, that's what they said it was. It was glow sticks, and they did a camera test, and it glowed.
Wow.
So that's what it's the stuff. Is that stuff like super toxic? I'm just watching what they're doing with it. I'm like,
I was gonna say, that's the stuff do not ingest whatsoever.
Now, earlier when we were saying that,
I wonder why they're angry.
He handles like. I don't think Herbert West does handle it well. I think he's been, like, dealing with animating dead bodies on his own for a long time, and that's why he's, like, at a stress level. At, like, all moments of time, his mouth is puckered. Because, I mean, and then when Dan catches him reanimating the cat, and he makes that weird fucking joke about, I was like, it's still, and he's, like, laughing to himself. That's when you're like, this fucking dude, that's like his only way of communicating with another human being, just because he's, like I said, he's been reanimating these dead things by him and fighting. I mean, that cat thing that happened to him had to have happened to him every time. So he's been beating back the fucking undead by himself. So I just think when he makes that crack, I was like, holy shit, you know, this is.
Kill it.
That 5 minutes might be my favorite. From when they find him with the cat on his back.
It's spread all over the fucking suction cup.
You've seen it before where the fake, obviously fake animals on the back and you're just running around. And then he throws it off. And then they chase it around the basement, which I thought was hilarious too. They're just,
that was genius because there's literally nothing. All it is two actors just, there it is. There, no.
It is.
Yeah. And some they're stuff, just like fucking hitting shit.
And some stuff on set moves. Like you could see that somebody moved it and it's just like, there's nothing there.
Shadow boxing? What do you call that? Where you're just kind of,
sure.
There's nothing there.
Nothing there.
We got to make this look awesome.
And then they throw it at the wall. And luckily the guts.
Well, I thought luckily at first, but if you watch this movie, like how many times do heads hit the wall and the brain sticks to the wall? Like spaghetti. Like it happens all the time.
So it's like a planned.
I think that they figured that out. School. Like how to make the brain stick on the wall.
It's dead now. Would you say it's dead? Would you agree that it's dead? Yeah. That's also
that's
my favorite.
The other thing about this. It's like, you know, the concept of it, you know, when you're looking at it, there's a severed head carrying itself around, like, you know, doing all this crazy shit. It's like, this is a fucking comedy. Yes, it doesn't play really, like a comedy, yeah. but I think it's a black comedy. I mean, it's yeah. like that scene you were talking about with the cat. I love the one with the what is it? The paper? What do you call that thing? The spike.
Right. Yeah. The put receipts on and shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he looks at it and the head won't stay up. So he's like, just put the head on the spike. It's like, it's sick.
It is. But it's
but hilarious.
Funny. And I think Jeffrey Combs plays that very well.
Yeah.
Like, even when he's not being like manic and the mad scientist, just that conversation they're having in front of the dead cat. Like, it's really good. Like, the acting's really good, especially in scenes like that. Yeah. I really like Jeffrey Combs' character.
Dude, Jeffrey Combs, good. This whole movie is Jeffrey Combs, dude. Sorry. Just the way he... Well, I mean, because Dan is just in shock this whole movie. Dan's just always like, and he's got to be like, give me the recorder now, Dan! Dan!
Well, and that's why I think, like, maybe that's why I said it was bad acting on Dan's part, because I like, when he's sharing a scene with Jeffrey Combs is so good that Dan comes across as not at all, you know, like, not even on the same wave or the same level at all.
Does he talk?
Yeah, but he talks in a very, like, you know, hushed kind of way. You know, he's always like, well, it's okay. I hate to lose you.
Yeah. Well, he's almost on the roller coaster, like, no emotion. Too, in
there's
a weird
no emotion
way.
Where, like, Jeffrey Combs is, like, all emotion.
Yeah. But I think that's by design, right? I mean, it is that he's in shock and just, like,
and Jeffrey Combs has seen it so
he
much.
He wants to, like, stop what Herbert West is doing, but he's also intrigued. He wants to be, I mean, why would he become a doctor if he didn't want to beat death, you
but,
know?
Like, even that first scene, it felt like a soap opera acting. Like, when he's I couldn't save her. You know, like, maybe it's melodramatic or, you know, like, this, a little bit. It's a little bit.
They have some great scenes together. Well, like, when he falls on the ground in shock and Jeffrey Combs just covers him up ever so lovingly, he's like, you're in shock. And then he just kind of pats his hand a little bit.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. That's why I love fucking Jeffrey Combs. Because he is a mad scientist, but he's also, like, at some points a real person. Mm-hmm. But he's still just a mad scientist. The guy just, he wants to experiment.
Yeah.
But then he finds this one friend, Dan, that, if anything, is just going to help. I mean, not his friend. He's just going to fucking help him. Mm. He's
he says because he's got connections to people within the, you know, the establishment, the hospital establishment, because he works really hard, is trusted. I mean, that's kind of why he zeroes in on him. It's like, how can I use you?
You can make me seem legitimate.
Yeah. That's why when you were talking about that scene where he makes the joke about the cat, and he's laughing. It's like, that's a joke that only he, you know, he made a joke that for himself that he's laughing at. It's not connecting with another person. It's
No.
He's
I mean,
off in his own.
I mean, that's
like,
the only way he can. You know, I'm not saying he's connecting with. I'm saying he's trying to connect with another person through a joke. But yeah, it's only something that people that fucking play with dead parts
like, for that long.
Very funny.
Yeah. Well, actually, that brings me back to what you were saying before, because we were trying to say, like, you know, is he just experimenting all the time? West on the dead people. I think the only that first one is like a real legitimate like experiment. Everything, all the other people that he brings back from the dead are like out of desperation, kind of. He sees things in a clinical way. Well, even that,
he's
it's
just,
like, even,
I never did whole parts, you know.
Well, it's out of he's out of the circumstances of the situation is where most of that comes
if you
from.
Have a dead person, but why not inject it with fucking reagent?
The circumstances.
Hey, I need to
more studies. I've never done them.
We need it fresh. It's that's, I mean, that's why I love this movie, is because it's like, oh my god, it's like they could stop it. Like, this movie has points where the, like, the shit could just stop and wrap up, but like, dude has to keep fucking like injecting that stuff. And
yeah,
I mean, it just rolls downhill once they get to the morgue, test on that one guy, then the dean shows up in a very hysterical, like, cartoonish way. Dean gets crushed by the door from the
thrown around
the
lot.
Door of the morgue.
It's very
the freezer door.
There's a lot of cartoon moments
and a lot of gore. You know, like, a lot of gore.
No, this movie tickled my gore bone.
It delivers.
I will say that. It was nice. I liked it.
Fucking delivers.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well, especially from that moment when the dean gets crushed by the door, his mouth is bleeding from that moment on. And the rest of the film, his fucking mouth is just dripping shit.
Yeah. Well, I remember just the way that scene hit me the first time I saw it. It was like when he walked in and, you know, he gets his fingers bitten off. That was the moment I'm like, no coming back from that. You lost your fingers.
Yeah.
And then, then he gets killed, and it's like, well, that's kind of, this whole thing is fucked now, because, like, that whole relationship's gone, this whole, like, you know, schooling thing is gone, there's probably murder charges involved, it's like,
they get past that real quick.
This just all went to shit, like, really fast.
Yeah.
even that they brought him back kind of solved everything, but, I mean, they'd be arrested on the spot.
Yeah.
For all that shit that's happened.
But they were blaming all Dean because he looked like a crazy guy. At that point, him being reanimated, he is a crazy person. So he's the one fucking Looney Tunes guy out of the whole, like, three people down there. So it's like, well, the story that Herbert West is saying must be true because he's crazy.
And I mean, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I suppose if it's still, you know, in the beta testing stage of the reagent, it's understandable because, like, there's no way that these people could come back and exist in society without people being like, no, you're either going to jail or you're going to the loony bin or you're, you know, we're getting
it's definitely not finished.
You can't. I mean, it looked like maybe not Hill. Wait.
Yeah, Hill.
Hill. Yeah. Maybe Hill was on his way, but still, I mean, he didn't have a head.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I like how there's that scene where the guy, the first corpse they reanimate that ends up killing the dean. I like when
it's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It really is.
This is what?
Body double.
Oh, really?
Or stunt double, yeah.
But I like after...
Is it really?
Yeah,
like an actual... I was going to say, because it looks just like him.
Mm-hmm.
After Herbert West kills him, Herbert West is like, he made a... you know, he responded to me. He responded, and it's actually Dan the one that's like, he just acted like an animal. He just is like, well, perhaps you're right. You know, I like how even Herbert West wants more out of the reagent than is actually there. Like, even he needs somebody that's going to... I mean, I think in a weird way, that's why he needs Dan. You know, because he's an insane guy.
Otherwise, he would go full mad.
Yeah, Herbert West is an insane guy. Now he needs to share that load with another person.
It's like the Mully and Sculler. What am I saying? Scully and Mulder.
Mully and Sculler.
Mully and Scully. Mully and Scully? Yeah. The end kind of.
Yeah. For sure. You need somebody that has a foot, at least a little bit, in reality, because Herbert West is already a little far gone.
Mm.
And that's what I like about this movie. It's like, there's not a lot that shows this in the movie, but I think it's there. I think it really is there.
Also the score.
Just
a segue. That's good score, even if it is a tad ripped off.
Yeah. At what point are you homage or blatant ripoff?
Or just put in, or just grab, hey, can I get that Psycho soundtrack over here? Thank you. And just putting it in your movie.
Yeah.
Still good, though.
It's Richard Band was the composer. He did, like, so many of the Empire pictures and Full Moon movies.
All of them, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Because Charles Band has become this, like, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't say a titan. He's like a Schlockmeister. I think he wanted to be what Roger Corman was in the 60s and 70s.
And he was.
Yeah, I mean, I was just looking him up yesterday. I'm like, how many movies have they got? You know, and they're just like fuckloads. I mean, they just crank out these pieces of shit, like Evil Bong, Ginger Dead Man. Yeah.
But a lot of them back in the late 80s, early 90s, I mean... They had special effects. You remember Robot Jocks and
that was a Stuart
Gordon Oblivion.
Movie. Yeah.
I mean, these movies had effect. I mean, the first Puppet Master movie, it had good stop motion. They've always done good.
And those movies seem to be like of a better, like there was, I mean, even though we're saying they were low quality, they were still a higher quality than the shit that he's cranking out now in the video, you know, like the shot on video age.
Because
you had to shoot shit on film.
I don't think Paramount is their distributor anymore, right?
No.
So back when Paramount was their distributor, they actually had like a budget, I guess, just because they had Paramount. I remember Moonbeam, right?
Had was those, their kids'
those
label.
Three pre-Hysteria movies that were pretty fucking huge.
Yeah.
The kid, I want to say the kid from Last Action Hero was in the first one.
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Huh.
They had like an adult label too, and all I remember was Beach Babes from Beyond. Babes, but I can't remember what the.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Like, it wasn't Moonbeam. It had something Moon in it or something like that. I can't remember. Yeah, and now they're still around, though. I mean, like, he's got, like, and he does, like, a road show. You know, it's one of those things. He comes around conventions and, like, brings people up on stage and, like, and acts out.
Sells anything from the Puppet Master series he might have laying around in his fucking closet.
Yeah. Sure.
Wouldn't you?
But at this point in time, Charles Band, and again, I don't know where he came from to get, like, this capital, but he bought... Right around this time, the Dino De Laurentiis had this, famously in Italy, had this gigantic, it was a cinema city. I think it was called either Cinecittà or Cinecittà, or however you pronounce it. But it was, it was a little movie town set, you know, and, a movie production studio that was like the size of a little
subspecies.
Town. Yeah, I want to say, is that Romania?
I want to say it was.
Maybe. But he bought this facility. So it's like, where the hell does the money come from that? And then they shot like Dolls and I think From Beyond.
Like
and
Castle Freak. Right?
Yeah, Castle all Freak. Over there in Italy. Because I was just watching something called Cellar Dweller, which Jeffrey Combs shows up in. I mean, it's all like Italian, you know, people in the credits. So, you know, then that was Empire Pictures. That was prior to Full Moon. Like, he had that thing and then he sold it again. But it was like they, I guess... A Reanimator was shot here, and then they went to Charles Band for like completion money or something, and Empire Pictures released it. So there's some kind of that's how Charles Band got involved and got his brother in to do the score.
It did feel like a trauma film to me.
Yeah,
yeah,
of the higher end,
the budget level of a trauma film for sure, definitely.
No exteriors.
No exterior.
I mean, there's establishing shots.
Sure, but
the whole thing at said, 2 in the afternoon.
But, yeah, I was going to say.
Bright as day.
They rated,
so it's in focus.
They rated the stock footage vault, and
that's what's so weird about this movie. It's like, some parts of this movie have really dramatic, like, nice lighting in it. Others, it's just like, huh. They just turned a light on and just went with it. Not very in focus, but they just. Yeah. It's so weird how, like, I mean, I'm sure. It was just depending on location, depending on whatever, but it's right. Like...
We're going to focus on
the it's very weird.
And Jeffrey Combs.
No, Mac Elberg, the director of photography, did a number of the... You know, I think he did Metal Storm, The Destruction of Jared Sin.
Right on that.
Okay, no, so he did House. And then John Landis. So I remember... John Landis brought him in to do Innocent Blood, I want to say, and said that he rescued Mac Elberg from low-budget horror movies or something like that, because he thought he was better than the, you know, the movies that he was doing.
Sure.
But I don't know if this couldn't have been at the beginning of his career, because I'm sure Metal Storm was before this, and he was doing stuff before that, so if this was 85. But the scene that everybody remembers from this movie is when Barbara Crampton gets tied down naked on a table and Dr. Hill. No, we didn't. We were going to cover it before.
Did we talk about it? No, we mentioned it, but.
And Dr. Hill, with his severed head, violates her. Or nearly violates her.
He like gets to her knees with his tongue out, then like stops.
Wants to.
He definitely licks her boobs.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But drips blood all over. I mean, that's what I like. It's just so fucking disgusting. It's like, it can't even be, like, sexy. No. It's so disgusting.
And it's like, at the time, I remember, you know, I mean, even still, I think it's probably, like, it's a strong, you know, moment for a movie where you're just like, okay, where's the line here that they're going to stop? You know, it's like, usually, like, in an R-rated movie, we've gotten accustomed to, like, you know, where the line is. And this movie just goes, like, past it, you know? It goes past it in its gore and violence.
Line. Somebody picked up the line and just running around with it going, I got it!
So, I think Evil Dead threw the line of... Because, I mean, Evil Dead was the most gruesome experience and terror, you know? And, like, I just think everybody after that had to, like, holy shit, dude, we need to, like, pick up our insanity.
Right.
Pick up our humor. Pick up our gore.
Well, that's it, right? I mean, that's, I guess, if you're a low-budget filmmaker or somebody starting out, and you're trying to make an impression.
Right.
Dude.
This movie made an impression.
What are you
going to
do?
Well, it's like a nightmare that gets worse and fucking worse and worse. I mean, especially just when they capture that scene where they break in and the dean is telling Herbert West that he's going to steal his thing and he's got even greater plans of having like a zombie cult-like thing. And I forget what he says, but then like then all the zombies raise up at the same time.
That is awesome. That was awesome. One of my favorite parts of this, because maybe you're not paying attention. Like, you know, they're in the morgue and there's bodies everywhere, but then they just all sit up at the same time. That stuck with me. That's one of my favorite images from this movie. I love that.
Because that's, I mean, that's fucking frightening. That's a nightmare.
That was
image.
I was not
that's
expecting that. Like, yeah.
Fucking like
all at the same time. That was great.
And it's probably through his, like,
right.
Right.
Can we just get some blue wavy lines shooting out to everybody?
We needed that sound.
Yeah. That's what we needed. That
mind
would be
great. Control. I think something that makes it even more disturbing in some way is that, like, they're all, I mean, as you would be, I guess, if you're in the morgue, naked bodies.
Yeah. There's all these
people wrestling. Naked. You know, your main actors have to wrestle with naked actors.
They do.
Where it's like, okay, get away from me. You know, kind of thing.
Well, they're all very heavily makeuped.
Right.
Yeah. Gored up.
I mean,
because one was the meatball who got run over by a truck. Yeah.
One
was the shotgun.
One was the shotgun. That looked face. Good as yeah. fuck. That's like, oh my god, dude. Shotgun fight.
Yeah.
And I didn't see, was the fat lady from the beginning in there?
No.
No, but there was like a kind of a bigger lady. Well, not bigger, but, you know, kind of like
older
lady with a.
I love that. Also, because they have another scene where I think it's lit from the hallway. Maybe even like there's a glass door or something, but. Like, all of the zombies, they're all doing the wrestling thing. They're all silhouetted.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah. Just see where, it, like, yeah, the, like where Meg and Meg and him are in the foreground, and then they're all coming up in the background.
Yeah.
And then her dad, like, fights them off, and then they take him back. And then
they
silhouette them when they pull them apart.
Right.
Because
it's even, apart. Like, they got bright lights coming in from each side when they, like, reach up and grab them so you
that
can't see them too
weird.
Much. That was pretty cool. I like it. Maybe it comes out of nowhere, but I like the way that was lit. And then they pull them back. And then
it was after
silhouette.
All the smoke. Yeah.
Right, all the smoke after the acid
where that comes from is Herbert West, like, well, the only way I can stop this is by overdosing the Dr. Hill's body. Right, so he sticks in two syringes, overdoses him on the reagent, but the body gets like weird, like he almost awakens an intelligence in like every cell of the body.
Yes,
like his intestines grow like a mind of their own and is able
right.
to. Well, because the dean already like crushed the head of Dr. Hill, so and threw it against the wall,
and the brains.
Right. Yep.
Like so this is really the body itself, like kind of taking on, and like the lungs, and
right?
The,
everything's just.
But that's where the light comes from. Am I wrong? Right? That's where the light comes from inside the body, because then that woman spills the acid or something,
right.
And that's supposed to start a fire.
When they cut to a certain point, like after. West has been wrapped in the intestines and everything, and he's kind of being held by the body. The light is coming from the body. I don't know if it's coming from the body or the light is at the body, but
that's
where the
like
light is.
The Beyond moment, like
it felt like
the
it
movie
felt like
after
he,
this. Right?
What I felt was like he was going to drag West's body into that body and make like a super body
or something.
That's
I
what
don't
it
know.
Felt
I don't
like
know
to
why
me.
He was
that's where
and
it felt
why
it was going.
I like the shot of the hand, like, you know, Kane's trying to grab West's hand. He keeps slipping away, and then when it cuts to what they're actually doing. Like, Wes is just lying on the floor, and Kane's just, like, right next to him going, like, oh, no, I can't save you. You're going to be swallowed. Like, you're right there, dude. All you got to do is
I missed that
just
one.
Got to help him out.
Dude, I do feel like the end of this movie, they're like, how
little,
do we wrap
right,
this
a little,
up, dude? Like,
but there's so much crazy shit happening.
Yeah,
I don't. Right. I think the first
they
time
really just
works.
Ignore it.
Yeah,
and they
just
ignore
like, just
it
go forward
because they just
forward.
Go,
yeah, just like,
go
just,
in the
if
elevator.
If you go forward, nobody will question
and
go.
Nobody, like, oh, yeah, there's... Zombies downstairs.
Right.
Right. But Meg's hurt, you know? I mean,
right.
It's one of those things where it's like...
Right, because then they go back down
to
the regular hospital.
How are they going to explain that to anybody?
And everything's kind of fine.
Yeah, there's some smoke in the
like,
hallway.
Right, there's some smoke in the hallway,
saying,
and Meg is hurt.
Well, people are saying,
but other than
that, there's fire. And then they're like, Meg's hurt, bring her in this room. It's like, isn't there fire? Like, I don't get how... Yeah, everybody's now like, we're in our ER world. You're in the hospitals on fire world out there. Let's deal with this. Especially, in, like, at first I was like, I wouldn't mind as much, but when they can't resuscitate Meg, that's when the head nurse has to do that whole, like, I told you, Dan. It's like, what's time? What's with the fucking emotional beat? There is a fucking fire in this hospital.
Then they all just kind of walk out.
Let's... Get out of the fire.
Guess what, you guys want to get lunch?
It almost seems like it's forced because, like, it is so deliberate that, like, yeah, okay, we get it in the beginning. He couldn't do it, and now it's
going to do it again.
Yeah.
I do love that.
But way much.
Because that's one of those endings where you know, like, oh, fuck, it's going to start all over again.
Oh, yeah. It's like the Pet Cemetery.
Oh, yeah.
You got to. You love the chick. You got to take her.
Return of Living Dead, well, the fire should put out the, or the rain should put out the fires, you know, blah. I mean, you just know, like, oh shit, here we go again. You're like, you're so used to like how it, like, we did something fucked up. We fucked it up more. And we kind of fucked it up more. We fixed it. We fucking fucking genius.
Well, Reanimator was more on Reanimator.
No.
Well, Reanimator was followed by, they actually did go for a sequel called Bride of Reanimator, which had Dean Cain.
Wow.
Not Dean Cain.
English is good.
Dan Cain and the actor Bruce Abbott.
I
want to
call him Dean Cain too. Dan
so Cain. Bruce Abbott was in it, and Jeffrey Combs. And I want to say David Gale.
What is the story?
Was like somehow
because it starts Jeffrey
off
Combs
with like out of the house on Haunted Hill. Dr. Hill's head comes flying in out of the black screen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at the very beginning of it. Yeah, I remember that.
The only thing I remember about Bride of the Reanimator is it starts with them being like missionary doctors, like in some foreign place, like maybe South America, almost like the Hulk, right? You know how the Hulk went to get away?
Yeah,
they figured, oh, we can keep doing our reanimating studies if we join these, like,
Doctors Without Borders.
Exactly. Doctors Without Borders. And
really
Dan's,
without borders.
But he's got a mullet in that one, I remember.
But Dan's like more in charge in that one, isn't he? I remember kind of liking, they're all pretty lackluster compared to this one.
And that was directed by Brian Yuzna, I want to say, the producer on this one. I think so.
Who directed Beyond Reanimator? That's when Herbert West is in prison for all his studies. And then, of course, he gets... Yeah.
Huh? And of course, how many years later was that?
It was a good 10, 15 years after Bride of Reanimator.
Because Bride was like within 2-3 years.
Yeah,
right?
It was pretty quick.
Beyond Reanimator was like years
and
later.
That was just straight to video.
Do you remember during the presidency of George W. Bush, I remember hearing the rumor that Stuart Gordon was trying to get like another Reanimator off the ground, and it was going to take place in the White House. Where they had to, I can't remember if they
the
were.
President?
What? Yeah,
it was him and George Romero just talking about
it. It was
going
to be
like,
William H. Macy was supposed to be in it. I think it was William H. Macy.
I would see that movie.
Yeah, and they talked about it for like a couple of years, but, you know, I mean, Gordon's talked about shit before that. It's never actually.
Well,
because
he talked about Dagon for years, and then when he talks about something for so long, but tries to do it so cheap that when he finally does it, it's not fucking worth it. Because it's like, well, dude. You cheaped out. I mean, of course you cheaped out, but come on, damn it. You can't. These ideas are pretty big. And they like involve. Well, did he do Lurking Fear, The Unnameable? Because, I mean, these guys have always done these H.P. Lovecraft,
I could be wrong. I don't think Lurking Fear is his, but it might be. But I know he did From Beyond, which that one's not horrible. Because that's Jeffrey Combs, Barbara Crampton. And I mean,
and once again, it's a story that, like, the H.P. Lovecraft story of From Beyond is literally 5 pages, and that happens in the first like minute of From Beyond. Then the rest is like
kind of what
happens after that, made up by Stuart Gordon.
Yeah,
that one I don't like so much.
Well, he also directed an episode of Masters of Horror, which was H.P. Lovecraft's Dreams in the Witch House.
Really?
So it was like an hour. And then he did Dagon, and I want to say, which is the Shadow Over Innsmouth. So that's like his H.P. Lovecraft stuff. But outside of that, he directed Space Truckers. Anyone?
Dennis I like Hopper? That movie.
Space Truckers.
I remember that movie. I remember
Fortress.
That movie.
Anyone? Christopher Lambert.
I've seen the cover of that movie.
No. I'll go back to Space
Truckers. About.
I'm like, what else is Stuart Gordon? He wrote Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Genius.
Yeah.
Hey, Russell!
But I don't think he got a chance to direct it or whatever the hell happened. And he did a thing with that was called Stuck a couple of years ago that I saw about, like, it was based on a real life story. It was pretty good. It had Mina Suvari and who's the guy from The Crying Game?
Oh, man.
Tim Robbins?
No.
Oh, no, that's not Crane.
Yeah. It's not Stephen Fry. God, what's his name? Anyway, he was in Interview with the Vampire. Anyway, it's about this girl who runs into this homeless dude, and he gets stuck in her windshield, and then she doesn't know what to do about it, so she just drives home and parks in the garage. Guy's alive.
What? Stuck in the...
Yeah. it was a true story. It's called
Stuck. Oh, I like it.
He did a movie called King of the Ants with George Wendt. I didn't see it, but it was like, what the fuck? And something where William H. Macy was a very angry man. I don't remember the title of it.
Huh.
I don't know. So Stuart Gordon. In a nutshell.
So, Colin, earlier you said that it was the best of the one of the better of the H.P. Lovecraft adaptations. So are you saying that, like, besides the ones we just talked about that he did, are there, like, what would be some other ones?
Yeah, what's other ones? Are there any other more?
Well, my favorite and Travis probably has a bunch, too, that you've seen, but my favorite is one called The Call of Cthulhu, which is only 45 minutes long, and it was made by the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society. Yeah, they went back and did it in Mythoscope. It's really cheap.
Oh, it's so cheap.
I mean, it's they're just fans, and they made this thing. It's like stop motion.
Wonderful. Yeah.
But it captures the feel that I've always wanted from an H.P. Lovecraft story.
Well, it looks like a silent film. It looks like Nosferatu or whatever.
And because it's from the it's like they shot it like it was shot in the 20s when Lovecraft was writing.
Yeah.
And its narrative structure is directly off the book. So it's not very... The problem with Lovecraft stuff is it's always like letters that are talking about the letters that they found from some other narrator who was writing about something that he found out, you know? So it's like, how the fuck do you put that into a linear storyline?
Yeah.
That's why I think
writers like Bram Stoker or Mary Shelley did it without confusing everybody.
Well, they,
but this guy.
Primarily, like, I mean, both of those have like an overarching narrative that's broken up into different points of view. But his is like, this guy is telling you the story because I almost went mad. No, you know, he's telling you about the story of the guy who almost went mad because that guy like read something else. So you're like three narrators deep in, you know, a lot of his stories or something. You know, it's like there's hearsay that came from here, blah, blah, blah. And it's not like a good, you know, three act movie structure aside from Shadow Out of Innsmouth, which I think, you know, there's the setup. And then there's the action. Then the guy's running from the fish people, you know, for like the second half of the story.
Fish people.
Or At the Mountains of Madness, where it's like we're going to Antarctica on an expedition, and then like the crazy shit starts happening to us. So those ones are kind of, you know, it's the people who made the fish people.
Okay.
The old ones.
It's all connected.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, it's all connected.
The deep
it's all
connected. Ones.
Lovecraft is one of the only authors, one of the only people maybe, whose name has been made into an adjective, Lovecraftian.
Okay. Of crafting.
That's how you know that
horror.
You're
crafting. Usually just followed by horror. So.
Yeah.
No one's ever like, that's a Lovecraftian tea set. That's a Lovecraftian.
Yeah, his shadow looms large. Especially over, like, now, the guy is probably more popular than, like, he ever has been.
Well, but that's because he's public domain and everybody can, like, make money off of his fucking concepts. It's kind of sad, really.
Well, yeah, you can just take his concept and then...
Because somehow other people have been able to... Like, other writers from his era have been able to at least keep their ideas in some sort of a family trust where they still have to be licensed. Lovecraft is...
I don't think he had kids.
Maybe not, yeah, maybe. But, well, I don't think Robert E. Howard did either. Conan?
And Robert E. Howard,
his,
like,
but his family, well, they didn't, I mean, they all, Lovecraft, Robert E. Howard.
Clark Ashton Smith.
Is there a fourth one?
It might be.
Can't remember. But they had, like, a shared universe. You can read Conan, and Lovecraft's monsters are in Conan. And Conan still reacts with that frightened, like, it still talks about, like, the fear instilled in him, and, like, yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah, he loaned his cosmology out, you know, these writers who would write fans.
Well, because they have one world. Like, Conan doesn't take place in the world of Hyboria. It's Earth in the Hyborian Age. So if the Great Ones fell to Earth trillions of fucking years ago, that's why all these writers are able to, like, look at the different times that people come across these ancient ones or whatever. fucking brilliant. My favorite is In the Mouth of Madness, even though it's not an adaptation of any Lovecraft, but to me it's the only movie that captures the idea of once you read something, an idea can drive you insane. Like, is it the actual monster that's driving you insane, or is it the idea that you're so weak-minded and so, like, easily suggestible that you went insane by the concepts? And that's, like, to me, I mean, period, that's the idea that, like, theology could, like, drive you fucking crazy thinking about, like, just, I don't know, what, eternity? Is that whole, when you stare into the abyss gazes back at you, that idea, right? That,
yeah. In the Mouth of Madness, you're right, does kind of capture that. But you know what? I just thought of another one.
What?
The Resurrected. You ever seen that? The Dan O'Bannon movie with Chris Sarandon? That kind of captures the...
Resurrected?
Yeah, it's like Lost. I mean, like, the movie's kind of gone on to...
Oh, Dan
like, O'Bannon? Yeah. Oh, weird, huh? I got to track that down then. You have to see that. Because it's an adaptation of The Strange Case of Charles Dexter Ward.
Maybe if I saw the cover... I think if I saw the cover, wasn't The Unnameable H.P. Lovecraft? Wasn't that movie based on
a story? Yeah.
What story was that based on?
The Unnameable.
Was it? I was going to say, was it of the same title?
Yeah. And Barbara Crampton went on to be in Your Next.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Hasn't been started, the Barbara Crampton Appreciation Club, as so named, we start that now.
Yeah, there you go. Barbara Crampton.
More Barbara Crampton, please.
She's in a movie right now as we record this called We Are Still Here. I think a ghost story.
Okay.
All right, so wrap-ups for Reanimator. Brent, you're in the hot seat tonight.
You're in the hot shit.
No hot shit. What?
No mailbag.
Oh, shit.
Oh, we had mailbag.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Mailbag. Oh, my God.
What have you been doing?
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
Thanks, Igor. Slacker. All right, so we do have mailbag tonight. If you want to get a hold of us, facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. Drop us a line about whatever the movie is that we're watching that week, or let us know how we're doing. We'll probably read it on air. Like this. Nick Hammond, frequent Freak Show collaborator, says, took you guys long enough to get to this movie, one of my childhood favorite movies. This was one of my first endeavors into horror movies as a kid, and remember watching this movie on an old recorded VHS tape. By far my favorite of the H.P. Lovecraft films based on his writings. It had everything a kid could want: blood, gore, and boobs. The movie has started to look pretty dated, and I do believe that this movie is due for a new generation remake.
And that's where we lost you, Nick. Sorry, we'll see you next week.
Hello. No, we lost
him. He also recommends the Jeffrey Combs movie, Would You Rather, which is recent. Dom Cree writes to us and says, I remember this movie for legitimately creeping me out, and it still does. No rating, though. Sorry, guys. I prefer to get my reanimated corpse kicks from Frankenhooker.
Oh, shit.
Wow.
He has a question. Where does Reanimator sit in the top 10 horror movies of all time, or does it fail to make the cut? To him, he remembers it as the quintessential 80s horror movie, and it would definitely have to go up there. Then he thanks us for doing Kung Fury.
You're welcome.
Ranking Reanimator. Top 10?
I don't know about top 10 horror movies, but this is definitely, when it comes in my mind, when it comes to what is a classic zombie movie? It definitely goes Night of the Living Dead, Return of the Living Dead, Reanimator. I mean, Reanimator is just like, it's not what you can consider a zombie movie, but you reanimate bodies. I call that a zombie.
And then you control it. Is
a- That's, it's kind of what makes it special, is that it's not about zombies, but it has zombies in it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like, it is almost like one of those old Bela Lugosi white zombie, you know, it's an old style zombie movie, especially with the whole Haitian fucking, like, people, dead bodies you control.
Well, it reminds me of Fulci's The Beyond, in the way that, like, it's a zombie movie only in, like, in the last
minutes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The first hour is screeching spiders.
I mean, the concept's there throughout, I think. But
sure,
you don't get the full-on zombie movie till the last
15
minutes.
I don't know that I'd place this in the top 10 horror movies of all time, but I think maybe if I was looking at
zombie movies,
top 10 horror movies from the 80s,
I'd
have to go back and do my math, but it's got to be in there. I mean, you've got Fright Night, You've got American Werewolf in London. You've got Hellraiser. You've got, I mean, I don't know if I'd count any of the Friday the 13th. Maybe. Well, Return of the Living Dead. Nightmare on Elm Street, definitely. Would Pumpkinhead be in my top 10?
Really? Maybe of the 80s?
I'm not
sure. It depends. I mean, I separate monster movies from horror movies.
Horror movies have so much you have to be specific
it's
about.
Like slasher, like, monster, like, ghost.
We'll take them all and make a top 10. You can't do that. You got to break them down by what they are.
Yeah, because we'd have to go like what?
The Shining?
Psycho, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, those are my first two, right? Psycho, Texas Chainsaw.
You got The Exorcist.
Halloween.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
I
love Child's Play so much just because
that might be in there. That might squeak into the top 10.
That was in 80s.
80, six, seven.
Oh, it was.
I'm gonna take that.
Child's Play 88. Yeah, so that's probably in there. So I don't know. Yeah, I would think it probably would make the top 10.
Maybe it would.
Horror movies from the 80s.
From the 80s.
But I have to go back and look at the list.
Yeah,
right.
The master list.
Somebody who made a list.
So then you're like, shit, that's right. The Japanese were doing this and the French were. That was all in the
90s.
Yeah, American horror movies. I still think 85 was a goddamn banner year. Banner year. 85.
Yeah, Back to the Future.
Yep. Back to the Future and Reanimator.
Friday the 13th, part 5.
Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2.
Ooh.
Poor Michael Myers was sitting this whole thing out in Leatherface. He hadn't been seen in like a decade. Wow. 11 years. He was out of.
Yeah, because Texas 2 was 86. 86.
Yeah.
Really?
Jesus.
Where was Halloween 2 at?
Halloween 2 is like 3 years later? Yeah.
That was 81?
81.
Oh. So the third, when did the third one come out?
83.
Oh shit! So they're all in the 80s.
Yeah. Right, but we're not going to talk about Halloween 3.
Yeah.
That's not going to make any. Yeah. That's not going to make any list.
Yeah.
Though I've seen. That has nothing to do with anything. I've seen recently that movie is making a resurgence. People are giving it more credit than I think it deserves. Halloween 3.
Oh yeah.
That's
no, I went back and looked at it.
I watched for the first time. I'm just like, I like elements of it, but that movie's bad.
People like stuff no one else likes. It makes them feel special.
They do. I'm just like, and to tell other people, they're like, you guys are fucking insane.
Surprise, nobody.
It's like, that's bad.
I was like, I remember hating this movie, but maybe it's actually decent.
I tried to dismiss it, but I had to say something.
I wish we could have. Let's wrap it up.
Yeah, wrap it up.
Before we talk about more Halloween fucking sequels. Jesus.
And, Dom, I mean, I don't know. These guys are more the horror aficionados. The horror guys of the group. But like the Reanimator, having it been the first time I've seen it was this night, tonight. It's not going to make any top 10 lists for me, but I think that I think it's something special. I'll say that. Watching it tonight, it starts out, it is a comedy. It's definitely a comedy, but it's creepy enough and it's science fiction-y enough. And it's enough of a zombie horror type film. I mean, for a low budget movie, like I said earlier, to me it feels like it's Troma-esque. And I think it's like, if it were a Troma film, it would be the best Troma film. It would be number one on the list. So I don't know. I mean, and Travis, I do like certain Troma films, but I think that I think it's cartoonish at times. I think it spins its wheels towards the end, but I also think that there's enough gore and creative scenes, moments. I guess the shit with the cat is great. I mean, even when the cat's in the fridge and like Jeffrey Combs, Herbert comes up with that story about, well, it was dead when I found it. Did you want me to leave it in the garbage? Because like he says that, you know,
you'd like me to leave a note. Dead cat. Details later.
Details later. I bought it. I was like, oh yeah, that's what you would do.
it knocked the trash over and its head got stuck in a jar and it suffocated.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Put it in the mini fridge next to the beer.
I'm going to tell you.
Yeah. I do love that actor too. I'm more familiar with him from The Frighteners, but I mean Jeffrey Combs is
that's unfortunate.
Brilliant. And well, we've had that conversation, but Jeffrey Combs in The Frighteners is brilliant.
Indeed.
And it's a similar character in this, and I like it. The acting overall I think is good. I think that these characters are, I mean, they're playing it over the top, but that's what this movie requires. I mean, we're dealing with, like this movie is out there, right? I mean, even by today's standards, I think it's a pretty out there story, which I like. I, you know, I'm not knocking it for that, but overall, I would say that you should definitely check out Reanimator. It's not the greatest movie I've ever seen. It's not the worst, but I had a lot of fun watching it tonight, and I think that it's definitely a good party movie. You know, you can put this on and at any time. You don't even have to have sound on. Like, you can just watch the gore happen
and the color.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty cool, and I really like the camera tricks when the severed head when
Dr. Hill, old school, just showing the head.
Like, just show the head, cut it off at the edge of the frame, and then have somebody else's hands holding the head.
Right. You only show the fake head from behind, and then when you got him, then you show it from the front.
But they did have a good fake head. I mean, it was pretty accurate. But, like, you know, a lot of, like hole in the table and, like, stick his head up through it and that sort of thing. So I appreciate that stuff. The effects are top-notch for what they had to work with. And, yeah, watch it if you haven't seen it. Check it out.
This is one of the best movies I've ever seen. Like, I mean, this movie is just 100% like fun, and it just goes. I mean, right from the get-go, it has your attention by watching a dude's eyes blow out of his sockets, and you're just like, Jesus Christ. And you got that nice camera turn where he turns the camera and says, I gave him life. And I think that's why this movie is so great, is because the character of Herbert West. Like, if that's not on the fucking page, it's from Jeffrey Combs. Mm-hmm. It's like, that guy, he just made a character. I mean, I'm fascinated with the character. These guys were kind of commenting about, like, I like to make his faces just because there's just something about, like, I can see what that actor is, like, thinking of, even though he's saying something else. Like, you could just tell what Herbert West is doing. You could tell whether he's crazy or whether he's being, you know, whatever, obnoxious or really snide. The guy, he's snide, right? He's so fucking, I mean, he's such a socially inept dude that he can't even meet, like, a doctor without fucking, like, ripping him apart, you know, even though he's supposed to be, like, learning from him or anything. You know, he just can't be a normal guy. He's, his experiments and what he's trying to do is just more important than anything, even his own safety, the safety of those around him. I mean, that's why it's like, this guy is what I call, what I think of when it comes to scientists, right? Someone that just wants to prove that he can do it no matter what the consequences, no matter what. I mean, this is why we have nuclear bombs and, like, all the great shit that we have in this world. It's because some scientists just need to prove they could fucking do something regardless of anybody's health or safety or, you know, it's fucking mad. It's crazy. I like pretty much all the acting in this, especially the dean in this, where he's a pretty normal, kind of a boring character for the first few scenes you see him. He just has, like, normal dialogue about his daughter. But as soon as he turns to a fucking zombie, the guy just becomes this weird character. He just becomes this really weird fucking, almost like a homeless man, you know? Or, I mean, the faces he makes, it's like, Jesus, this is like 100% different dude. It's like, that's fucking acting, you know? I mean, I just can't imagine what that guy would be like in real life, you know, somehow. Because, like, well, he's probably not this super stiff Puritan guy. And I'm sure he's not this fucking wild-haired, like, wide-eyed fucking just madman just, like, screaming to himself in a padded room. But that guy's performance just really captures my imagination. And just any movie, like I was saying earlier, where you think you're out of the water and the weakness of the character keeps bringing you back in. I mean, that's what I love. That's, like, almost the human condition, right? Like, we could always pull ourselves out of anything, but god damn it, you know, we just have our own agendas, regardless of how focused or how selfish they are. So, yeah, man. Yeah, dude. I love this movie.
I really like this movie, too. I think what sells it for me the most are the effects, the gore effects. I like good gore. This does it really well. Jeffrey Combs is fantastic. Like, just, and I don't know why, but just seeing his range, because he is, and I mostly know him as a crazy character. Like, he's usually out there when I see him acting. I love that in this, but I also love, and I keep coming back to this, I don't know why, there's just that one scene after they've been attacked by the cat, where they're just sitting there explaining the science to each other, and he almost, you know how you see actors who just kind of play normal characters, but then they have this one where they play really just out there characters, and you're like, wow, I didn't know they could do that. Seeing Jeffrey Combs come back down and just play kind of, he plays a med student just talking science for a second. And to me, that stands out really well. The fact that he can do all of that, fantastic. Love it. There's a lot of good moments in this movie as well. Like we said, I love when all the bodies get up and all the zombies start coming out. Really good movie. Really entertaining. I liked it. I give it out of 5 half-destroyed reanimated cats, I give it 4 half-destroyed reanimated cats.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is certainly a classic of the horror genre. One of the, I guess, I don't know how modern we'd say, modern era is like anything post, like 1960s, post-Psycho maybe. yeah, I mean, it's definitely up there as like required viewing. I think it's so bonkers and bug nuts crazy that it, okay, and just, you know, plunging like just straight ahead, you know, with that momentum that it's got, where it seems like it knows exactly where it's going. I mean, that's, I guess, what kind of sells me on the idea that the movie, it's sure footed. It's like it's aware of what it wants to do and how it's going to do it. And, you know, this is what we're going to. It's got a guy walking around carrying his own severed head,
which is like one of the most iconic images. I mean, just that
right?
Yeah, right,
so stomach.
Well, I mean, I know that I've seen that gag done before, sure, but like this is the one. You know, it's those moments where you know that you've hit the like defining cinematic moment is when you can't think of the one that did it before this. I know they did it in the 70s, and they did it on fucking TV when I was growing up. Mm. You know, I mean, that was how you did it. He had the guy sticking his head through like another, or he had the fake
giant shoulders,
you know, neck on the shoulders. You know, it's like, I remember seeing that before. Now I'm blanking on what, but it's like after you've seen Reanimator, it's like, okay, that's the movie with the guy with the severed head that he's carrying around. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And that, I think, like elevates it somehow into its strangeness, and it's fun. And everybody keeps talking about, like, in the 80s, horror movies were fun. I mean, when you look at, like, all the movies that I mentioned that came out that year, Fright Night, Return of the Living Dead, Reanimator, maybe not Day of the Dead. But, I mean, they were, you know, they were movies that, you know, you were energized when you saw them, you know? And I think that's, you know, the parents were all like, you know, it's like you're watching these horror movies, blah, 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 but they were exciting in a way that wasn't, you know, about the death, destruction, and mayhem, you know, the bloody guts and carnage, although I think there's something that too, and the wall-to-wall nudity and, you know, Barbara Crampton's boobs, like, in close-up a lot, you know,
helps. Sure, Stuart Gore is just like,
but I think that there's like this kind of, I mean, it feels like almost like some kind of hippie commune of filmmakers, just kind of like intoxicated on the idea of creating something, you know, that's like fun. And they're all just kind of getting together and doing this thing for what's low money and little resources, apparently, that it just kind of, you get swept away on that. And that's why I think what makes it, you know, you can feel the excitement somehow through the screen, you know, when you're watching it.
Because it is like a three set movie. You got his apartment, the basement, and the morgue.
Yeah, and the hallway.
Hallway.
Yeah, but that's like...
Well, yeah, they just boop, 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 boop. They just keep going back to those three places. They really don't go anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for the Reanimator stage play. That'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like I'm pretty sure there is, like, a musical. Yeah. Somebody's done...
Gotta be.
The Reanimator, but... yeah, I mean, I guess I wanted to watch it tonight because for some reason, the guy's sitting here at the table with me, but...
We always watch it together.
Horror film fans, whenever they talk about, you know, horror movies, especially like, you know, the younger generation coming up, it's like, keep going back to your Halloweens and your Texas Chainsaws, and hell, they know about movies less or that were originally more obscure than this. I mean, The Hills Have Eyes got a remake. I would say that, you know, Hills Have Eyes is a more obscure movie than Reanimator. But somehow by getting a remake, people know The Hills Have Eyes. And Reanimator and Hellraiser are like the two that I'm like, man, when I was younger, those were, you know, fucking intense, hardcore horror movies. I mean, the gory is all hell, and, you know, and now it's like nobody, in, you know, seems to know them as well. Like the guys who saw them originally, you know, still cherish the memory of these movies, but I think we need to bring them back. Not remake them.
No.
I'm going to say, you got to introduce your kids to the fucking Reanimator. Or kids out there.
Yeah, can I borrow this? I'm going to show it to my kid tomorrow.
And there you go. Spread the word. Reanimator. Where are the comics? The Reanimator comics.
Actually, a four-issue miniseries actually just wrapped up this month called Tales of the Reanimator.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so go check out your local comic book store.
It's coming back.
Yeah, Dynamite Comics has actually done a few stories. A few which were illustrated extremely well. I'm not sure how the writing is. But
well, does like McFarlane or NECA do the Reanimator toy line?
No, there's no Reanimator toy
line. What the hell? No. This is what I'm saying. No,
because it would be Jeffrey Combs.
No, you'd have fucking Dr. Hill in the fucking removable head. Well, that guy can't
sign off his likeness rights.
True.
Yeah,
that's true.
Growing up, I always heard about Reanimator and Scanners. They were the two.
Right?
That, yeah.
Which I never saw either of them, obviously, but tonight was the first time for Reanimator, but yeah, they were like, that was like the lore, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
I've always heard of Reanimator for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
As like an extreme movie? Or
as like a cult favorite.
Yes, mm-hmm.
You know,
indeed.
Like the Scanners, the head blowing up was the
right,
big
yeah,
thing.
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah.
Which is the only good part of the movie.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah,
I haven't seen that either.
Yeah. So that's Reanimator on Saturday Night Freak Show, and next week would be Jenny's pick, which apparently is Return to Oz.
Don't quote us on that.
Sorry.
Are you going to make it to next week?
And it's next week. And until then, ladies and germs, the basement is going dark.
And it's dark.